Hey, Flaunt Squad, welcome to Flaunt Performance, the podcast for the voluptuous runner. You can go to flauntperformance.com to pick up 10 laws of power for the voluptuous runner. I am your host, Aja Yassir. I really need to ask you a question, Flaunt Squad. Does the term plus size offend you at all? Send me an email at contact@flauntperformance.com. And just say yes or no, it offends me or it doesn't offend me. And if you feel like it, tell me why. Please tell me why. I want to know. I want some feedback on this because I have a lot of things on my mind about the term plus size. I do. Well, today we have Mila Marshall on social media. She is known as Kales the Yogi. She's going to be talking about yoga and the benefits of yoga for runners, but not just any type of yoga. I ran across her social media site because it stood out. I mean, she's doing trap yoga, trap music yoga. If you don't know what trap music is, you can look it up. You can probably find it under some kind of urban dictionary, but she's doing trap yoga. She's doing black light yoga. She is doing yoga for couples, and it's really hip yoga with Nas and hip hop playing in the background. Really, really hip. So I ran across her social media page and I was intrigued, very intrigued. So I decided to bring her on the show. Let's sit back and learn about the benefits of doing yoga for runners with Mila Marshall. Welcome to the show, Mila.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Now, let's talk about your name. We were talking about it a little bit prior to the show. Kales the Yogi, is that how you're known on social media?
Yes, my official birth name is Kellen Marshall. I was named after a football player, Kellen Winslow. But, you know, the name, you know, sometimes you outgrow things. And a part of me feels a little, you know, a little smothered by Kellen. So I decided to choose a name that fits more closely with who I feel like I am right now. So that's why I chose Mila.
Okay. Now, before the show and before I talked to you, I was a little bit iffy. You know, I'm from Chicago, too. Mm-hmm. You're from Chicago, right, originally?
Yes, I am so shy.
Okay. So Kales to us in Chicago, that's what we call our Kelly. And then I was thinking most of our population consists of women, and I don't know how women are going to feel about our Kelly. What do I call her on the show? Let's get that out in the open.
So first of all, it irritates me that, you know, no matter, even if I wasn't into yoga, it's something that my friends call me, Kay or Kales. Like, it's my name. Like, just because that's his last name doesn't mean that he owns all of the Kales or nicknames, Kales or Kelly. You know, like, it shouldn't be that. I thought about, you know, how people would see me or hear me or read the name. But then I also kind of have some faith in that people aren't that fickle as far as treating me a certain kind of way because of what they, you know, what they believe or what they dislike about the artist. I don't try to, you know, compare myself or, you know, put myself in that community in any way, shape, form, or fashion. It's just my name. It is what it is. It can get a little uncomfortable because some people are like, oh, yeah, like R. Kelly. Like, oh, okay, well, or like Kellen Winslow. You know, like it can get a little funky, but at the same time, I think that people are willing to just kind of let it go and realize, like, I am a woman. It is my name. It's not something that I chose. It was chosen for me. Yeah.
So, Mila, when I first ran across you, I think it was an ad that you put on Facebook. I don't like yoga. I'm going to confess. I used to take hatha yoga, and I was like, okay, this is too slow. There's no sweating here. What am I doing here? But then I saw your ad that said trap yoga. And I was like, hey, I like trap music. So why did you decide to make your yoga classes so hip?
So I cannot take credit for this, you know, genre or style of class. I think many people probably have been practicing to, you know, gangsta music and, you know, what's now called trap music in many different sports and activities, right? So when we work out, well, when I work out before I started practicing yoga, I was listening to Lil Wayne and Rick Ross and Tupac because it, you know, connected me to my physical workout. It made me feel good. I went harder. At home, I would have my own practice and I wouldn't play zen-like music. It was music that, you know, connected with me. There's an instructor out in DC that had started doing trap classes, and you know, I'm here in Chicago, and of course Chicago has the Howard connection. I feel like you think going on in DC, get back to Chicago, you know, fairly quickly. And I had some friends that were, you know, coming to my beach yoga classes and my classes over at the Southside Community Arts Center, and we were talking about how can millennials, more specifically African Americans, connect with yoga. And I was like, well, you know, I have seen, there's an instructor that's been really successful with connecting the message of yoga, the practice, through using gangsta music and trap music. And they were like, word, like, you should do it, you should do it. And I was like, eh, you know what, I don't know about that. I didn't know how it would feel for me to teach it. I didn't know how I would create the class. I didn't know how it would conflict with my philosophy of yoga and what it is that I was offering as an instructor. So at some point, I did a little reflection, and I also reached out to the instructor in D.C. and asked him, you know, what was his experience like energetically teaching this class, because the music is completely ratchet. I mean, the message in the music often is very derogatory and you know, it's not positive. So after, you know, those conversations and thinking about it, I decided if I was going to do a trap yoga class that it was going to be on purpose. I was going to pull all the juice out of it as I possibly could. So I am, you know, the style of yoga that I teach is a hatha style class. There are longer holds. There is some vinyasa involved, but there is some, you know, you definitely get a good sweat. But the purpose of my class is not for a workout. It is uniting the breath with the body. The only thing that's different is the music that is the soundscape of the class. So I decided to teach this because it offers us an opportunity as African Americans to have a practice that doesn't feel like we're, you know, culturally appropriating somebody else's activity. I feel like Black people, we're probably some of the realest people on the face of the earth, and we do not do fake, especially here in Chicago. We don't do phony. We don't like to feel like we're stealing something from somebody or we're biting somebody's style. Like, that's not who we are. So how then do you help people have a practice without making them feel like they're pretending that they're of another culture? So this kind of neutralizes some of the experiences that people have had, where they hear their voices, they hear voices that sound like them, as well as see instructors that look like them, using language that connects with them, whether it's in the what we call cueing, how you move your body, the words you use, the little jokes, the inside jokes you might have, and even to the flow that you put together. So for my class, every month the theme changes. I decided, like, I'm not just sticking to trap music. I'll call that the class. But, for example, November was, like, Namaste with Nas. So it was a whole Nas soundtrack.
My God. What?
It was great. Namaste with Nas was great. I had some fellas in the class. And I'll touch upon that in a couple of minutes. But then December was Dirty South December. So that class, when you think about South, you think about, you know, life is slow. Not only is it slow motion, but it's also kind of hot. So the class was a slower class physically, like in terms of movement. The cues were to slow your breath down. The class built heat, so you were definitely warm even though you were moving slower. So it's not just about the music. You know, I say the soundscape is secondary to the soul, period. I don't care what music I'm playing, whether it's soul music or trap music or zen-like music or nature sounds, what you're hearing is secondary to your breath. But the trap music does get people in the door and on their mat, and it offers people an opportunity to practice focus and not being distracted. So the music invites you to come play. It will invite you to go down memory lane. It'll invite you to sing a hook. It'll invite you, you know, to remember, you know, the last time you heard this song, like the first time you saw the video. But in that moment of distraction, you have an opportunity to choose yourself over the distraction. And that's the other part of yoga. It's not just about moving your body. There's an internal practice as well. So for, you know, those that look like me, that are in my age range, that, you know, are from the city, that live these fast-paced lives, that, you know, have social media accounts all over the place. We have our, you know, dedication to our community, to our families, to our respective passions and professions. Life can be very distracting, but how do you choose you first? And that's the one thing I love about the trap class, because you see people get pulled out by the music, and then you see their face when they realize, I'm choosing myself now.
What does it mean to go hard in yoga?
You know what? I don't know. I've never...
No, you said earlier, I don't know if you were talking about going hard in your workout or you were talking about going hard in yoga.
In my workout. So when I was practicing, like running, for example, when I turned on certain types of music, that would make me go harder. I realized in my yoga practice, it makes my yoga practice more enjoyable. I do realize that I can press, like, if I'm going to, let's say, do core work or activating my core and learning how to do handstands, I will take that energy, you know, from if I was running and I run faster, my focus and intention is deeper and is stronger in my yoga practice with a certain soundscape. Now, I've been able to move away from that and not have any music and have the same type of feeling of, you know, that the music gives me without the music, because the music can become a crutch. It can become, I can only run fast when I hear, or I can only go hard in my practice when this type of music is played. And that right there is a trick of the mind. So I also offer students moments of silence in some of the classes, and like your breath is what should motivate you. Your breath is the only sound that really should matter in your practice, regardless of who's on the stereo.
How do you train your brain not to need the music?
So short answer, meditation. We call yoga moving meditation. A practice of mindfulness is something that I think is very useful, because what will happen is that the chatter of your mind or the need for your mind to attach to something starts to lessen as you're able to turn your brain off. So this is where I get real yoga-like. In yoga, we say the seat of the mind is in the heart. So right now, Aja, I'll ask you to do a quick little exercise with me. So are you sitting down?
Yes.
Okay, and this is for everybody that's listening. So I would like for you to, you know, have a seat. Make sure that you're safe. You're not driving a vehicle. Step your feet hip distance apart and sit tall in your chair. So align your ankles directly under your knees and your feet are flat, toes pointed forward. Inhale your shoulders up. Exhale them down and back. Right here, imagine you have a string at the top of your head, right where the baby has a soft spot. Imagine somebody has a string and they're lifting you up. So find some length in your spine. Send your breath down into your belly. And also imagine you have a grapefruit between your chin and your chest, and you're not trying to squish it. So you want a nice long line between your ears and your shoulders. start to connect with your breath. Follow your breath in, follow your breath out. As you do that, Aja, I would like for you to quiet your mind and just listen to your breath. Drop your tongue from the top of your mouth, unclench your jaws, and take one more big breath down into your belly and exhale your navel to your spine. You can kind of come back to yourself, flutter your eyes open, swallow a little bit, lick your lips. And that little exercise, very, very quickly, if you are not practiced with slowing your mind down, the first thing that happens when I ask for you to stop thinking and focus on your breath is everything that you ever could have thought about run through your mind. It could be songs playing backwards. It could be to-do lists. It could be memories. It could be colors. Like, your mind just goes crazy. So meditation has you learn how to turn that off, turn your awareness inwards, because your brain is, it wants to attach itself to something. Sometimes it's a negative thought. Sometimes it's a song. It's a, you know, your brain is a muscle. It wants to work. But you are not your brain, right? When you were sitting there, were you able to immediately stop thinking about everything?
No. I felt the relaxation in my body, but it did take me a second to quiet my thoughts.
So the interesting part is that if you were inside of yourself and you were being aware of the brain moving and thoughts and things, then who are you? Right. If you're not your thoughts, then who are you as the person inside witnessing the thoughts in the mind going crazy? So often I don't get time in my class to offer people opportunities for mindfulness, for breath work, outside of uniting the breath with the body. The trap class is kind of a taste. It's something that I don't offer every week. But if I could, the class would have more, like it would be built in, you know, 10 to 15 minutes of breath work, of mindfulness, of learning how to turn your brain off and focus on your breath. I'm hoping that I can get to that, because what I don't want to do as an instructor is to give this practice piecemeal and not provide the rest of the practice for, you know, for a full yoga experience, which is having the ability to decide on your level of focus, decide on your mental clarity, decide on how you move forward, you know, through a challenging moment, or hearing things that are hurtful, or hearing things that are really good. Like, life is just filled with distractions, but those distractions, whether positive or negative, can still harm you and not serve you as you, you know, try and attain your goals.
Is uniting the breath with the body difficult to trap music? Or Nas, or any other types of music that you might use in your classes?
It has nothing to do with the music. Now, there is some choreography in vinyasa. I do believe that some people probably will, drop down on beats, you know, exhale, drop down on the beat, inhale, you know, on the up-tempo. You really do have to know all of the songs in order to choreograph a flow like that. But my teaching doesn't do that. I am not connected to the music. The music does not move us. Like I said, the soundscape is secondary to the work on your mat. It does provide a theme for the class. So, for example, January was Thug Life. It was cold outside. People think that Chicagoans are, aggressive and angry, but we're also very warm-hearted and kind and compassionate. But we can, you know, be a little thuggish. So for January, I had, you know, people could wear their hoodies in the class to kind of hold on to some of their heat. We did a lot of heart opening. The music was, you know, it was anything thug-like. So lots of Tupac and Jeezy and some other artists. But the class isn't so connected to the music that it runs the class. And the bodies in front of me, while I might have a class, you know, written out, I never know who's going to show up in front of me. Like, I have the names, but I've never seen the bodies. It could be a pregnant body. It could be an injured body. It could be an elderly body. So I also have to be very cognizant about the skill and abilities in my class. And my two classes are never the same. Because of that, I can't give you the exact same experience because y'all aren't the exact same people.
What's your philosophy of yoga?
Can you, you know, help me understand what it is you are asking about the practice or about the philosophy of yoga? I could take it in different ways, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Well, earlier you said, you mentioned, I don't know the exact sentence that you used, but you said your philosophy of yoga, as if it was a little bit different from what the general population believes.
So there is something called yogic philosophy. And so a lot of people believe that yoga is a religion. It is not. It is very secular. While there is spirituality, there are some basic principles and foundations of yoga that we live by. There are the eight limbs of yoga, for example. So this isn't, it's not my personal philosophy. This is a lineage that I am attached to. So there are ways of living and being and practicing, not just in your physical posture, but in your life and your lifestyle. So, for example, they're called yamas and niyamas in Sanskrit. There's one called ahimsa, A-H-I-M-S-A, ahimsa, which is nonviolence. So in my class, for example, one reason why the words go hard never come out of my mouth in a physical class that I teach is because I teach from a place of do no harm. Do no harm to yourself and do no harm to others. So when you're on your mat, let's say you have an ankle sprain. In this type of society, we live in a go hard or go home. Keep pushing, push through the pain. All of these mantras that tell you, regardless of how much it hurts, no pain, no gain. That is a lie. That's not true. In yoga, if you feel pain, there is something wrong. You need to stop. Often in life, we harm ourselves. And a yoga practice can remind you of just how quick we are to practice self-harm. If we practice self-harm so easily, it becomes very clear that we can unintentionally and very subtly harm other people. Because we do it to ourselves all the time. We have a practice of it. So I use the yogic principles to guide my lifestyle as well as how I teach my class and what it is that I teach my students. Now, when you get on your mat, you make that choice. I will offer people opportunities to let it go. If you have an injury, you know, self-modify. I had a very bad injury, and this is how I learned to live my practice, Aja. I fell off of a yoga wheel, and I had two sprained ankles, bone bruise, and stitches under my knee, and sprained my right wrist. Now, I'm right-handed, and I taped my wrist. Now, consider my left wrist is fine, and so I can't hold to things. I can't write very well. I can't grip a doorknob. And it was when I was gripping a doorknob with my fingertips of my right injured wrist that something hit me, that I am choosing to use an injured limb when I have a perfectly good 100% healthy wrist where I don't have to modify? I can strengthen that wrist and let my right wrist rest. So I have moments that remind me of what, you know, what am I doing? Why am I not allowing myself to fully heal? Why am I risking re-injuring myself? Why am I not working on creating some balance in my body? These are the types of things that I offer in my practice. And if trap music gets you to the mat to have those experiences, I'll play as much Jeezy as you want.
How are you getting men to the mat outside of the music? And how are they taking it? Because yoga can be seen as something very different, specifically in the Black community amongst men.
It is super, girl, first of all.
Right, because they see it as, I'm not wearing any tights.
You know,
what?
You know, like, that's for women, which is, you know, like, again, Western thinking. It can come off as very feminine. And there are a few ways that I have introduced yoga to men here in the city. My favorite way, and which is a taste, is through my touch class. So I teach a class called Touch, a yoga experience for partners, where a couple, doesn't matter their relationship status, comes to a partner's class. The class allows for people who are all levels of yoga to come and learn basic partner poses, but it is all about understanding touch, understanding sometimes there are supporting touches, there are affirming touches. Our bodies are, you know, three-dimensional, that we can provide rest as well as support as well as balance for our partners with our bodies. It is very close. It's a more intimate practice. So that class gets men on the mat because they're next to their boo, which is great. But it also neutralizes some of their negative experiences because they've had, like, they've been to a Bikram class. Or they've been to a power yoga class, and I've heard words like torture, I've heard brutal, I've heard killed me, and I've heard hate it from men. And my heart breaks because they took a more physical class, and it almost ruined the experience for them ever wanting to do it again. So that's one entree into a yoga practice. I do teach at a gym, and I'm also an athlete, so I do also teach the Yoga for Ballers class. I think I might rename that because I want it to be open to all athletes. But flexibility is the last practice of an athlete's regimen that seems to be of importance. It's not prioritized in a very intentional way, which is odd considering it is useful for injury prevention as well as recovery, not to mention just mental focus. I think when I started reading about depression in professional athletes and in some instances college players committing suicide because their bodies are injured and their identity is attached to a sport, I became even more passionate about wanting to help men have a practice that have athletic bodies. And then the other part is trying to educate men on quality of life and lifestyle. When I learned that Black men have, they lose 5 years off of their lives just by being born Black, that kind of pissed me off. The stress of being an African American man, the types of physical jobs that they have and the stress that they carry causes harm to their bodies and their physical well-being, diminishes their quality of lifestyle much faster in comparison to their white male counterparts. So in that, I love men. I was thinking, like, I'm recently divorced, and like I'm out here dating, and like I find a guy that I really fall in love with, and like it's minus 5 years already. That's some bull. Like, I want all of my years out of you. So I became very attached to helping men, especially, understand what is the role of flexibility in just in the quality of their lives. And I also have no problem kind of leading people to information about, like, the Cubs had a private yoga instructor, for example. I can't remember the guy's name, but he's a black guy. Then Olympians with the last Olympics that passed were talking about the usefulness of yoga and meditation for their practice and their lifestyle. So you have, you know, people, you know, of both genders practicing, but it seems that I speculate that in the coming years, you'll see more black men practicing yoga and because it helps them live a better quality life.
How can yoga improve our stamina as runners?
So like you hated yoga, girl, I hated running. I ran for Simeon. And I feel like, why did God give us feet? For this? No. we got knees. I'll just crawl. So, runners put a lot of miles on their body and on, you know, different types of terrain. Whether it's dealing with foot issues, ankle issues, shin splints, knees, a lot of injuries come from imbalances in muscles, instability in hips. So yoga then comes in as a practice to support healthy range of motion and balanced muscles in a runner's body, as well as breath control. That's one of my favorite parts about yoga, is understanding how to control the breath to be beneficial for whatever it is that I'm going through at the time.
Many of our listeners run back-to-back races, marathons, like every other week. How often should they be incorporating yoga into their training?
Every day, every single day. Now, here's the thing. People think yoga is like some 60-minute practice a day. Yoga is a breath. It is a pose. It is something that you can do sitting down. It's things you can do in the shower. You can do it in the bed. Some of these stretches can be before your run or after your run. I am an advocate for at least one guided class a week, just to be in a space to feel supported and lifted. But I do think if you are an athlete and you are physically moving your body every single day, there should be some very intentional moments of uniting your breath with your body for flexibility, specifically for flexibility. There's something powerful about intention, not just I'm doing it because it's a means to an end, but I'm intentionally working on stabilizing my hips. I remember reading studies about what happens when you give your attention to a part of your body that's injured. It heals faster versus you just like, oh, my body's hurt. When you think about the elbow, you place a loving touch on it. You rub it, you know, kind of talk to it. That part of your body, you know, gets a little extra energy versus if you don't, you know, give it any awareness. I mean, plants have the same response. All the little projects that kids do when you give attention to something, when you touch it, and the type of touch you give it either helps it or it hurts it. And our bodies are the same way. So a strong yoga practice can benefit runners physically as well as energetically, and not just, you know, help them for their runs.
And runners are often very stiff. What will happen to our bodies if we let them stay stiff like that over the years?
Spinal issues. The first thing I think about is lordosis. For those, so that's kind of hunchback, people with rounded shoulders. Sometimes your vertebrae can fuse together if you sit hunchbacked for long periods of time. Muscle imbalances that lead to unstable or destabilized joints. So risking knee replacements and hip replacements at a younger age. The one thing you don't want to hear is you can't run anymore. That would, you know, definitely hurt some people if you're really attached to the physical practice. Pain, the activities that you enjoy doing, you might not be able to do them, or you would have to modify them. You couldn't do them for the, you know, longer duration. So standing, walking, sitting even can be uncomfortable without something underneath you, depending on what's going on with your hips, shoes you can wear. So lots of things can happen with stiffness. Injury is huge, you know. So if you have a tight hamstring and you're running, you risk tearing, ripping things, having to go through surgery and then recovery. So a stiff body, you know, is imbalanced, and it is at constant risk of being injured every single day. And from the slightest, you know, thing, you know. So if you think about somebody who's really stiff and they trip, they could break something, rip their Achilles tendon, break a toe. But somebody who's flexible, their foot will roll, and it might have like a minor sprain, but it is not as debilitating as, you know, someone who's inflexible.
Mila, I am convinced, just after what you just said, I am so convinced that yoga is the way to go. For I am, and it takes a lot of convincing. It takes years of convincing for me. But, and I might not keep this on the recording, but I do have to say this. I share some of your ads to different groups that I'm in, right? Mm-hmm. There, I mean, I like the ads. And I'm looking at you, and our audience, and I'm probably going to get a lot of backlash from this, our audience consists of plus size runners. And I'm looking at you, and I'm thinking, okay, I guess then the general population may say she's plus size, but she's a regular athletic body, the athletic body that I used to see when I was growing up. So I think the term plus size is starting to offend me because of that. And I was thinking about this last night. Do you enjoy being considered a plus size woman?
You know what? So me, my girl, I got a, do you mind if I plug my girl? Because I can't tell this story without saying who she is and like the context of this.
No problem.
Okay. So her name is Natasha. Hey, Tosh. And she, has a business called, Curvy Express. She's a stylist for women, that are, what does she say? Like, 16 or 18 and up. And I was like, wait, hold on. Like, so what about me? Now, I'm a size 12 in some areas and like a 14 and a half in others. So I have a small waist, no butt. Well, I'm getting a butt thanks to the squats. But I am a 36 double D, sometimes 38 triple D, depending on the size and brand of the bra. So in yoga, I'm considered curvy. But in life, I'm not. I don't belong with the thin girls, and I don't belong with the thick girls. So I'm like in this middle where I get no love. I get no respect. I don't care what anybody calls me. I don't care what you identify my body type is. All I say is I have a beating heart. People have asked me who can't come to your class. I was like, are they dead? Well, they can come. Somebody it's one, yoga does not discriminate upon size. Size is relative. It's strength and balance. So regardless, and people have all sorts of things going on with their bodies. Like, I see people that are regular size in terms of weight, but their arms are short, right? There are some poses that they physically cannot do because their arm to torso ratio is off, or their arms are longer, or their legs are shorter, or their legs are longer, or they might have some soft tissue issues. Their soft tissue issues might be their butt or their gut, and it could be a man or a woman, and they could be black or not black. So I've realized that a lot of people I have people of, when I say all sorts of bodies in my class, I offer modifications because I'm not in an official studio. I don't have props, but I do love using props to help support people, to lift the floor, to make poses more accessible, because your body may not be ready for a certain expression. I love that because I had to learn, Aja, to move myself out the way. Like, I've been practicing yoga, like I said, for about 5.5, 6 years, and my breasts are huge. I cannot physically lay down flat on the ground. And all these, you know, itty bitty titty women, they laying down and they look all happy. and I'm in pain, right? My nipples, one nipple is this way, one nipple is that way. And somebody in a class said, if you have any soft tissue issues, pick it up and move it. And I tell Aja, I am very emotional, mm-hmm. but in that moment, I did start to cry because I didn't even realize that I can move myself out my own damn way. This is my body. And so what? My breasts are large. And if I have to move them out the way to get a better pose, to feel better in my body, these titties is moving. This gut is moving. Like, we make it seem as though our bodies are negative. They are reflections of things going on in our lives, but I practice, my body is perfect as it is. I am breathing. My heart is beating. And if I am not happy in my body, then I'm going to do something about it. But that does not mean that I'm a bad person. It doesn't mean that I'm not happy with myself. So for those women who would look at me and say, you know, how can I trust that I know what to do with your body? The first thing is to understand, as long as you're breathing, I can get you into your pose in your body. For those that are interested in coming to my class that are thinking, I'm nervous, I don't know if I can do the poses, I would suggest investing in yoga blocks. Yoga blocks lift the floor. It makes poses much more accessible. I also teach a pole yoga class that's going to be starting in April. Poles are often, you know, pole fitness is really popular, but I love the pole for yoga because you can reach around in all directions. It provides support and balance. It makes poses accessible for all body types. And the reason why I started doing yoga, Aja, is to present it as an option for everybody. Like I said, it doesn't matter how many limbs you have. Doesn't matter if you can hear me, you know, like my mama asked me, like, what is silent yoga for deaf people? I was like, no, ma, like it's not for deaf people, but I can. She's like, can you teach a deaf person? I said, yes, I can. It's amazing how connected we are to identifying what is for who. But I will say this, yoga is for everybody.
Thank you so much for being on the show, Mila. How can somebody take your class, get in contact with you? We have people all over the world who are listeners to the show. So how can they get in contact with you or follow you?
So I am on social media as Kels the Yogi. You can visit my instructor website at MilaKMarshall.com. All my classes are up there. I often write blogs about yoga and poses and things like that. So you can follow me on Instagram or on Facebook.
Mila, can you say your website again? I think it went out for a second.
Oh, yeah. Mila, M-I-L-A-K, Marshall.com.
All right. Thank you so much. And have a great rest of your day, Mila.
You too, Aja.